Welcome to the Quotivation Podcast. Together, we will unlock inspiration one quote at a time. Your host is one of America's top emerging public speakers. He is a former semifinalist in the World Championship of Public Speaking and is an expert motivator. Please welcome Jody Powell.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Quotivation Podcast, where we are unlocking inspiration one quote at a time. I hope you had a fantastic weekend. I hope you're rested. I hope you're recovered. I hope you have recouped from the week that was so that you're prepared for the week to come. It's not always easy. It's not always easy because sometimes we find ourselves in situations, whether it's in a relationship, whether it's within a job or a task or something that we're doing in the immediate present moment, that we're like, I just don't belong here. I'm not happy here. I don't want to be here. I want to encourage you a little bit with that. Now, if it's not a safe place, if it's not a safe relationship, if there's something there that is truly affecting you from a mental health perspective, then by all means, get out. Find a way. Find help. But if you're just frustrated with your job, or you're just frustrated with your spouse or friend or family, who, whatever the case may be, and you find yourself just really wishing you weren't where you were, I'm going to encourage you to be in the moment. Wherever you are, be in the moment. Embrace it. Embrace it so that you can bloom. Do you know how beautiful a rose smells? Most of us do. We've all smelled a rose or a flower. Pick your favorite flower, whatever scent that you like from the floral world. Now imagine, and I love roses, so I'll stick with the rose theme here. Now imagine a beautiful garden full of roses. I'm walking through and I'm smelling the red ones and the white ones and the yellow roses, and they all smell so wonderful, so pure. What a beautiful garden. These flowers have bloomed wonderfully. Now imagine one of those roses growing wildly in a very grungy, dirty slum part of town, in an alley where there are dumpsters and trash and discarded food and waste all along the alleyway. And yet there in that alley is this one rose. And you lean down and you smell the rose. And guess what? It smells the same in the alley, just as it did in the garden. Wherever you are in this world, whether it's your job, your relationship, your friends, your family, whatever you're frustrated with, if you feel like you're just in a place that you just wish you weren't, I would encourage you to bloom where you're planted. Doesn't mean you have to stay there forever. Doesn't mean you have to stay there for long, but stay there for the moment. Allow the environment around you to feel the beauty that comes from within you. Well, that's how we can win our week. And another way to win our week is get started with this episode, listening to the Quotivation Podcast. We've got a great episode, so why don't we get started right now by taking a shot of motivation. And of course, as always, our shot of motivation is sponsored by my good friend, Amy Real, the real deal in all things mortgage. Amy Real will help you solve whatever mortgage issues that you have. And I'm going to tell you something. There's nothing better than finding out that you can get guaranteed cash. This cash guarantee program from Fairway Mortgage that Amy Real can help you with, it eliminates the contingency to buy. You don't have to worry about, is someone going to buy my house so I can get my dream home? Give her a call today. Ask her about the cash guarantee program. Ask her about refinancing. Ask her about that second mortgage on that lake house that you've been eyeing. She can help you with all of it because she is the real deal and all things mortgage. I just perused her Facebook. I just took a look at it. There are houses for sale there that are closing, and she's celebrating. Yay, another closing. Another one happened today. She is getting it done. So if you need to get a mortgage deal done, you need to call The Real Deal, Amy Real. Her phone number is 864-310-9337. That's 864-310-9337. You can email her also at amy.real, that's R-E-I-H-L, at fairwaymc.com. Amy Real, she is the real deal for all things mortgage. When you give Amy a call and you get your mortgage deal done, tell her you were motivated to do it. Her NMLS number is 486620. And as always, Amy, thank you for sponsoring this week's Shot of Motivation.
It's time for a shot of motivation, where the vibe's like taking a shot, but the high is pure inspiration. This is a quick, powerful boost of motivation to fire up your spirit. Get ready for a rapid infusion of uplifting stories, impactful quotes, and game-changing ideas. It's the swift, potent dose you need to amp up your game and win your week. It's a shot of motivation.
Now, if you know me, you know that I love anything and everything to do with culture, whether it's culture in a corporate environment or culture in a communal environment, our society. It just fascinates me how people work together, live together, break bread together, and this dynamic forms around these teams. See, culture is really a misconstrued word. Many people, especially in the business world, will think culture and they'll think beanbag chairs and ping pong tables and letting your workers wear ripped blue jeans and play video games. That's not culture. That's not it at all. See, the way I look at culture is how things get done. It's the actions that are acceptable within a group of people who believe and are striving for the same thing. You believe in the corporate mission. You believe in the company's vision. And you're striving to complete that. Well, there are certain ways that you act and behave and communicate in order to accomplish that. That is culture. Now, I saw something on LinkedIn. I'm not going to say who posted it. I don't think I know the person. But I'm not going to call them out like that because it's just something that I don't believe in. And I hear things like this, and it drives me insane. Let me read you this quote or this post that was on LinkedIn. It says, sales leaders can't drive culture, and it isn't something they should be focused on anyway. This may sound odd, but here's why. Culture in sales is an output, not an input. When leaders focus more on the right inputs, culture takes care of itself. Culture really is just a winning environment versus a losing environment. It goes on to list several things that the manager should focus on, like not overhiring, ensuring that first and second line managers are effective, having consistent, clear, and fair incentive plans, collaborating with marketing at the top of the sales funnel, all of these things. And he says at the very end, it says, things like that will create a winning environment, and you'll never really have to worry about culture. So according to this post, culture is nothing more than making sure you hit your goals. You hit your goals, you reach your success, your incentive plan, your commission goals, whatever it is, that's going to breed a good culture. In the words of the famous and now vintage Butterfinger commercial, au contraire, mon frère, I'm afraid not. You see, culture happens whether you focus on it or not. And specifically, for leaders in an organization, this is so important for your job. This is so important for your success, not just short-term success. I'm talking long-term success. When everyone is clear and understands exactly how to reach success, then you will consistently reach success. To say that you shouldn't even worry about culture is ridiculous. And then to say that culture will take care of itself? I've heard this before. And if you've said it, I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. You're an idiot. That's insane. Culture never takes care of itself. Oh, it will. Culture will develop on its own if you don't manicure it, if you don't take care of it. But it's not going to be the culture that leads to success. Think about it like this. And I love this analogy, and I've heard it. It's not mine. I've heard it before. Culture is like your front yard. It's your front yard. Now, you can water the lawn. You can put down pre-emergent weed and feed, fertilizer, overseed. You can aerate. You can do all the things that you're supposed to do to have a healthy lawn. You can mow the grass at a certain height, at certain times of the year, whatever it's supposed to be, and you'll have a clear, beautiful, green, manicured lawn. The neighbors will talk about your lawn, and you'll have the little sign that says, I am the lawn of the month in the neighborhood. Or you can ignore it. Not going to fool with it. Yard work's not my thing. It'll grow. I'll mow it every 2 or 3 weeks. That's about it. You're going to have grass. You're going to have weeds. You're going to have crabgrass. You're going to have all kind of things growing in that yard, and it's going to be uneven. It's going to be unmanicured. It's going to look terrible. And ultimately, it's going to drive down the value of your home. That's just a fact. You see, when you cultivate your culture, when you take care of it, when you feed it, when you give it nutrients, when you water it, it comes out like a beautifully manicured lawn, and it adds value. When you say things like, culture will take care of itself, shouldn't even have to worry about it, you're going to have the ugliest lawn in the neighborhood. You're going to get the letter from the HOA telling you you need to hire somebody to come out and do your lawn because you're driving down the value of the houses around you. That's what happens with culture. Let me give you a sports example that I think it's great. Now, some of you are not going to like this, but I think it's funny. Let's talk about the greatest team in the NFL. If this were the early 90s, it'd be America's team, the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys were the most successful NFL team in the early 90s. They won 3 Super Bowls in 4 years, 92, 93, and 95. 2 of those were won under the leadership of head coach Jimmy Johnson. And of course, their owner, everyone knows, Jerry Jones. Now, what led to them being so successful in winning 3 Super Bowls in 4 years? Well, it's simple. Good players, a few great players, a couple of Hall of Fame players, a hard-nosed, disciplined coach who had structure, who had discipline, who held everyone accountable. Leaders in the locker room that held each other accountable. A winning attitude. And the marketing mind behind the team to promote them to be America's team. Everyone had a role, everyone had responsibilities, and everyone knew what was expected of them and how to do it. What's happened to the Dallas Cowboys since they won the Super Bowl in 1995? A whole lot of disappointment, because people stopped doing the things they were supposed to do and that was acceptable in the culture. You see, the owner went from being a marketing mastermind to wanting to be part of the coaching crew. He wanted to make decisions about who played, what kind of plays you ran, and who was going to be on the team without consulting the head coach, which led to Jimmy Johnson leaving before the third Super Bowl was even won. Then you bring in a coach, Barry Switzer, a former college coach. Now, he won the Super Bowl in 95, sure. But Switzer was a very lackadaisical coach when it came to discipline. He was very relaxed compared to Jimmy Johnson, who was strict and held people accountable and talked about the way we do things as a Cowboy. Switzer just kind of let things go. He stopped fertilizing the lawn. Then you saw a decline in performance. Then Switzer left in 97 or was asked to leave. Depends on who you ask. And from then on, it was a struggle to keep a head coach. Chan Gailey, Dave Campo, Bill Parcells, Wade Phillips, Jason Garrett, they all had their shots. They all had very inconsistent results. Many times the Cowboys didn't make the playoffs, and when they did, they failed to reach the Super Bowl. They failed for a long time to even win a playoff game. Then there were issues in the locker room, these great, high-paid, talented players began getting arrested off the field. Suspensions on the field. Arguing back and forth. There was a lack of discipline, a lack of focus, which reflects a deeper cultural problem within the organization. Jerry Jones micromanaged every head coach that he had since Jimmy Johnson. If he thought he could get away with it, I think he'd name himself head coach. So that micromanagement is not a recipe for success. So the story of the Dallas Cowboys highlights how a lack of cultural cohesion, how leadership conflicts and inconsistent management practices can undermine the most talented teams. The Cowboys could have been a dynasty from the 90s on. But instead, they stopped manicuring the lawn. They let it go. And it led to a lack of success. You want to win your week this week? Look around where you are and inspect the culture, at work or at home or wherever. What are the problems there? Is there an understanding of how things should be done? And are those things that lead to success of whatever you're trying to accomplish? If not, then be the change. So, oh, I can't make them do this. I can't make the boss do this. You don't have to make anyone do anything. You can do the actions. You can do the things that are necessary to be successful. You can hold others accountable to being successful. And suddenly, you've become a culture contributor. And you've developed something really powerful. That's how you win your week this week. I want to thank Amy Real, the real deal in all things mortgage, for sponsoring this week's Shot of Motivation.
This has been a Shot of Motivation from America's leading emerging speaker, Jody Powell. We hope it helps you win your week.
All right, let's get to our special guest this week. Karen DeLoach is an artist, art mentor, actor, author, and creativity specialist. She teaches art in college using textbooks that she has written. She believes we are all creative. You are not too old, and it's not too late to create. And she has the stories to prove it. Through her program, Art as Self-Therapy, Wellness Through Creativity, Karen has helped so many people overcome life's challenges and find their creative side to unlock a world of possibilities. Please welcome to the Quotivation Podcast, Karen DeLoach. Karen, how are you?
I'm great. It's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I am so excited that you are here, and I am really excited to hear about your program. Tell us a little bit about what you do, how you use creativity, specifically through art as self-therapy, and what are the benefits of that?
All right, you're not expecting an answer less than 25 words, right?
Absolutely not. It's your answer, so you give me the full version.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm an artist. First and foremost, almost an artist myself and filmmaker, you know, actor. We've been involved in the arts all our lives, musicians and artists and singers and dancers. We are the arts family. Arts and entertainment is our bag. But, you know, I love teaching too. It is in my blood also to teach, and I love inspiring other people with their gifts and enabling them and equipping them to be really, truly fulfillment with being creative. You know, we have half our brain. I've done some research. I'm not a scientist, but I've done some research. Half our brain is wired for creativity. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, we look at our 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds, and they've done studies, and 98% of them are considered creative geniuses. But how many adults? Like 2% are considered creative geniuses. So what happened in those decades that we grew up not believing that? And that's what breaks my heart and what I want to see changed in so many people's lives. So, you know, as you get a hint yourself, what did you love to do when you were 5 and 6? What did you do in the playground? Did you run and jump and play, or do, you know, direct plays like I did? You know, the jungle gym is the spaceship. It's come down. There's a monster. You're going to rescue them. You know, so these are the stories I was doing at 5 and 6. So of course I would end up loving storytelling, but I also loved art. My mom could give us crayons, but for me, you know, that little piece of paper just wasn't big enough. So I ended up, you know, much to my mother's chagrin, drawing on the walls, which got a lot of cleanup required. But, you know, my mom couldn't know that someday I would be paid to paint on people's walls and do murals all over the place. You know, so I try to encourage people, look, what did you love when you were 5 and 6? It's still there. And so that is my message. It's still there. That creative gifting is still inside of you, longing like a little flower bud, wanting to be watered and nurtured and grow. And you'll find so much joy. It turns out scientists say that serotonin, the happiness chemical, is released when we just look at beauty, look at art. Some of the studies I've been reading about, like people who love to sing in the shower. Do you sing in the shower? Do you know anybody who sings in the shower?
Uh-huh. It's the only place I sing in the shower, in the car. It's the only place that I'm allowed to do so.
That's exactly right. Or somebody's turning the radio on for me. But they found out for people that sing while they're doing something else, like scrub-a-dub-dubbing, rubbing in the tub, right? There you are. You're resting your left brain. You're not trying to figure out anything. You're just going through your routine, right? Normal, singing along your favorite song. And you don't realize that you're creating these incredible neural connections, brand new connections between your left and right brain. And as you do that, it's like a spider web is creating these new pathways for your brain to solve problems, right? So you get out of the shower, you're feeling good, you've released that serotonin, you're warm and fluffy in your towel. And an idea comes to you. Maybe it's a phrase you were looking for in the book you're writing, or a poem you're writing, or maybe it's a solution to a relational issue or something with work. And you hadn't even made the connection that while you're rub-a-dub-dubbing in the tub, singing, you are actually problem solving. So it's also what I found to be healing, that these neural connections, your brain, even if there's been damage or brain fog or some loss in some way from an injury, that when you engage the right brain, the plasticity of the amazing brain and mind we have starts bringing new connections to maybe restoring. And I've seen that happen. These are some of the stories. And, you know, before I understood any of the science before it, I saw this happening with my own students and in my own life. And so that's why art as self-therapy, wellness through creativity, is a passion for me.
Karen, what does happen though? Like you said, you know, when we're 5 and we're 6, we're playing on the playground. I remember you mentioned the jungle gym. You know, you play lava. Don't touch the ground. The ground's lava. You know, you got to, you know, risk your life to jump from the jungle gym to the pull-up bars without touching the ground. You know, that's the reason that Gen X is the most, you know, durable generation, because we did stupid stuff like that at 5 and 6. But, you know, that's not uncommon on the playground. Like you said, 98% of children are considered creative geniuses. What happens between 5 and 6 and 40 and 45 to where we've just lost that?
I got some answers to that question. There's a couple of things that come into play. One of them is a school system that absolutely promotes and, you know, is all about the left brain, which is order and memorization and logical thinking and creative thinking. I mean, critical thinking, measurable, right? Memorize a spelling list and answer these questions. You did it. You got a B, whatever. Right. But the subjective world of the of creativity is harder to define. Is that a good drawing, a bad drawing? You know, that's one of the components, is an education system that's preparing you for a world and testing you for a world of left brain work. Mm-hmm. And that's generally what most people do, get into a job that uses mostly their left brain. And when they want to be creative or need to be creative on the job, you know, there is some stirring of the right brain. It's not like we never use our right brain. I don't want to pretend that's the truth. But here's the here's another reality that plays into effect. That right brain creative side is very sensitive. It's our intuitive, our imaginative, our inventive side. And it's fragile. It has a sensitivity that can be wounded easily. Mm. So there, you know, I can't tell you how many times I talk to people, this has happened to them. They're, you know, including those of us that wanted to sing and somebody turned the radio on so they found out our voice. Right. What do you think that does to that little person's desire to sing? Yeah. No, I'm only going to sing in the shower. I'm only going to sing in the car by myself. So nobody has to be subjected to my off-tune singing or whatever. And then I found joy in worship when, in you know, God likes my worship songs. It doesn't have to be on key. Yay! No criticism there. Right. You know, so this right brain can get wounded. You know, our efforts when we're young can get you know, somebody told me that their first grade teacher tore up their crayon drawing because they colored outside the lines. Yeah. And so at third grade, someone said, "You want to color with me?" And already she's like, "I can't color." I mean, she became convinced she was terrible at it. And how many of us say, "I can't draw a stick figure. I can't do this. Yeah. I can't sing. I can't dance. I can't," because somebody has told you, you can't. Mm-hmm. But if you look at your little 5 and 6 year old self, where, you know, you were keeping time with that, you know, percussion instruments and you had it good. I have one of my sons, everything was a drum. It doesn't matter. And he's still that way. You know, everything is a drum. Well, of course he grew up to be a musician. Because in my house, those things were encouraged. We were homeschoolers. Well, what is it? Who are you wired to be? And we're going to find that. You know, I didn't raise any rocket scientists, okay? I didn't. My musician husband and we ministers, you know, we did not raise.
The world needs musicians, though.
You know, in spite of the last few years where everything got shut down for us actors and musicians and, you know, galleries, it was a reality check for all those of us in the arts and entertainment world. But, you know, I've studied, just realizing that every person has this in them. What is yours?
Yeah. Wow. So how do we get it back?
Yeah,
how do we repair that? How do we repair that broken spirit? And that's what I feel like it really is. It's a broken spirit. Whether someone has told you, you can't do this, or you can't draw, or you can't paint, you can't sing, or we have compared ourselves to others and thought, oh, wow, they're so much better than me. It's not even worth me trying. It happens. So how do we get that back, Karen?
That's such a good question. And, you know, it's something that I've spent a lot of time really looking at and evaluating. How do we get that back? And one of them, you know, is realizing that it's there and understanding, wow, that wound is still there. Because, you know, we talked about quotes that really are lies. You and I, it's like time heals all wounds. No, it doesn't. I'm sorry. You know, you can be 45 and what was said when you were 7 is still hurting you, or what was done is still hurting you. And that, how about sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. What's the truth of that one? Not bad.
Not, you know, exactly. Lying.
So they do hurt, and they hurt that part of our brain that is wanting to be sensitive and intuitive. And if we have, you know, this desire to be, you know, in touch with our spiritual part of our body and our lives, that's part of our intuition and our connection with Holy Spirit, with a spiritual world, is through this part of us and the pineal gland. I don't know. I've studied it. I'm, you know, I'm not an expert, but it's real. And it can, you can get healing. And that's my point. And one of the things that I make sure when I work with people is that I create a safe space. This has got to be a no criticism zone, because guess where criticism and judging comes from? It's left brain. Okay. There's places and time for it. Okay. When you're operating in new arenas of creativity, when you're learning anything, even if it's a language or a new program, you need to shut that, what I call left brain bully down. Mm. That side that's saying, you can't do this. You can never figure that out. That's not who you are. You failed at that once. You're going to always fail at it. You know, it's such a bully lying, got to shut it down. We still need our left brain. It's wonderful. We don't want to have any disparaging marks about the left brain, but it's not a competition. It's more like getting your right brain developed and released and trained so that it can operate in conjunction. It's about the connections between life, right and left brain. Sure. But here's an interesting thing. When a new preborn baby is really little and gets old enough to be determined it's going to be a little boy baby, there is a chemical wash that goes over the brain that dissolves a lot of the neural connections between left and right brain. So as men, little boys are born, there's things that they have to learn to model that isn't already there, like having a benevolent father figure who's going to show them how to grow up to be the provider, the nurturer. You know, I know I'm like, could be politically incorrect here, but I'm telling the truth, okay? Biologically are perfectly ordered. Yeah. And they, you know, I joke about my husband. It's like when he pulls up after he's driven us home, he's a great driver. He brings the family home safely. We're there. It's like he has to unlock the door and get in. Boom, conquered. Boom, family's home. And I'm like trying to carry all the bags and you know, whatever, you know, like come back now and get the rest of the chopped up. But in his mind, he's conquered. He got his family home safely. And it's wonderful. It's part of who he is, who he's wired to be. Men have these compartments, you know, I heard someone call it a waffle. You have these different compartments and they're able to do their job and they can do this and they can do that. And it's all separated. Yeah. Not for women. We're born with all these connections that means we can, my husband jokes and says, you only think you can multitask, but we do it now. You know, you were answering the phone, got cooking dinner, got a toddler, whatever, your world feels, you know, really wildly disconnected, but it's partly the way our wiring is. Yeah. And, you know, the cool thing is, this is always happening. It doesn't end there. And of course, as men, you're building those neural connections every day of your life. So it's not like, you know, you're born and gosh, you just don't have as many, you know, we got more of them for various reasons.
Well, it's to keep us in line, I believe. So it's, you know,
it's not working very well.
Well, sometimes, I mean, it's not an easy job, but I heard someone say that God took Adam's rib, not his spine. She's meant to be beside you, not behind you. And so, you know, that's part of the wonderful creation and biological facts of what it means to be, to have a spouse to there, that's really there to support and you're there to support one another and to really lend those strengths to help fill in the weaknesses of each other, which I think is just, it's just beautiful. It's just beautiful. And I love what you said as well about self-doubt and how that can lead to just this belief that we can't do something. And it brings me, of course, I go right to a quote, but Sylvia Plath said the worst enemy to creativity is self-doubt. And how many times do you hear this, Karen, where someone comes in and says, I can't do that. I can't draw. I can't paint. I can't play an instrument. I can't. And if we continue down the mindset of we can't, then we won't. How do you turn that around? You have incredible stories of students who have just who were told and society believed that there's just no healing for this, that have come to you and have found incredible healing. Talk to us a little bit about the healing process.
Yeah, it's you know, before I even understood the process, I saw it happening. You know, even in my own life, and this is a smaller story, but maybe a lot of your audience can relate to this. You know, I had a lot of choices because of the creative world I was growing up in to go to college. So I ended up in a liberal arts school where I could be an art major, but also do theater and engage in the sports activities that I loved. So I kind of got to do all that world, and I had a lot of drawing experience and good training, and I came with pretty well-defined drawing skills. And I got through the first year, but the second year I decided to be a painting major, and I was taking painting really for the first time and pretty much failing at it. I love to draw people and places and scenery, and I love to make them look like the person, and I like them to look like the scene. You could identify it. Sure. And this is in a world of basically abstract expressionist trained professors. So I went to summer school to another college and tried a couple more professors to see if I could find anybody who liked my art. And by that time, they were using four-letter words to describe my paintings, and it was devastating to me emotionally and mentally. And I thought, okay, I chose the wrong major. I am a failure at painting. And I switched to sculpture in graduate school. I still continued my art training, but I went for sculpture and ceramics, which I still love. Mm-hmm. Okay, I would say I'm a three-dimensional artist. I can't do painting. I can't paint. And this went on for a long time but I would keep trying. I started having these beautiful babies born, and I wanted to paint them. And I would start the paintings and I couldn't finish them. I'd reach a point where it wasn't good enough for what I was trying to do. I didn't have the skills, and I still had that negative mindset. You're just not a painter. You're just proving them right.
Yeah.
Until I got a mentor who had been to the Chicago Art Institute back in the 50s when they taught foundational skills. He taught me how to paint.
Wow.
Changed my world, changed my life. Those skills enabled me to become a painter like I wanted to do, which was my interest in what I wanted to paint. It also made me a better teacher because I used those same foundational skill building in drawing and in painting. So my students have the tools they need to actually be able to do the kind of work they want to do, which could be abstract expressionism.
Sure.
You still got to understand color and value if you're going to make them wonderful paintings. So it was, you know, not only did it change my thinking, and I had to realize that, wow, I really accepted that negative mindset about who I am to the point where it shut me down completely.
Yeah.
And I had to get the training I needed and then to change my own mindset to get that out so that I could blossom in this arena. And that's true for every single one of your listeners. There is an area in your life that wants to blossom and be the fullness of who. Why else did we born with half of a brain for creativity if it wasn't to be utilized? Yep. And it is easy to do, and you may already be doing it. There may be ways you don't even realize. How about cooking? You know, if you love to cook, there are so many ways to be creative in the kitchen. All you have to do is, you know, oh, you know what? I don't have vanilla. Let me try it with almond. You know, right now you're using your right brain and your left brain together, which is the real true goal here. It's creating these neural connections. And all of a sudden you got to treat your family loves better than ever. Yeah. And, you know, you're doing that every day. Or how about gardening? What kind of colors do I put together? I know my master gardener husband, I taught him color theory and color mixing, matching. And he's like, this just was so invaluable in his landscape business to understand how to put plants and textures and colors together to make these beautiful beds for people, for his clients. And there's a lot of ways people who are designers or decorators or maybe fashion, understanding texture and color and value. These are all such valuable skills that are so much fun because, again, when, you know, people that sew, you're using your left, right brain, and you're creating new things. You, as a podcaster, you are incredibly engaging both left brain and right brain. You got to get all the scheduling correct. You've got to get all the technology in order. You've got to have timeliness with starting and stopping. But meanwhile, you're creating content that's never been here before.
Yeah.
And so it's brilliant use of both of your left brain and right brain. I commend you for that. So there's a lot of ways to do it.
There really are. And I love what you said. You know, when we were talking and you sent over some information to me, you believe that we are all creative. You're not too old and it's not too late to create. It brought me to one of my favorite movies, which is Ratatouille. Chef Gusteau said, anyone can cook. Anyone can be creative, right? I mean, it's simply a matter of belief, mindset, and recognizing creativity in our lives. Like you said, it doesn't have to be painting a beautiful portrait or a mural. It doesn't have to be singing the song on key. You can have creativity in your work, in your hobbies. You can be creative in sports. You can be creative in life. It all feeds into what you are created to do.
And
you can have creativity and so much satisfaction within all of that and healing within all of that. I think it's wonderful. And Karen, you talk a lot about that as you go, it's in your pop-up podcast that you have for our guests. Tell us a little bit about the pop-up podcast. It's a 3-episode podcast where the audience is given easy instructions how they can use their creativity in mental wellness to kind of heal the emotional wounds. Talk to us about the podcast and then how do we access it?
Yeah, it's www.getcreativewithkaren.com. And it is
what a creative link.
Thank you. Get Creative with Karen. And it's 3 episodes, 20 minutes long. And in that, I give more examples of how you can engage your creativity. I give some challenges and some ways to connect with me. I wanted to tell a couple of stories. You mentioned some of my students, and these are some dramatic stories, but they can apply to you or some family members or other listeners. One young man, this is in the homeschool world, was ADHD and dyslexic and not thriving in his academics at all. And we have a lot of people suffering from autism and different dysfunctions that are hindering their ability to sit and fit into our classical school situation. Mm-hmm. And they're feeling like failures. This young man was depressed. He felt like a failure. And his mom brought him to my studio. And I started teaching him drawing, started teaching him painting, started teaching him sculpture. And this child was thriving for the first time in his life, found something he was really good at. And I had the opportunity to enter my students' work in a big art competition, youth competition in our low country here. And they were winning ribbons. They were winning, money even in their work. And it changed him. It gave him the confidence to overcome those challenges academically. His mother found manipulative math programs, ways that he could incorporate left brain, right brain, and so start compensating for some of these issues he was having with his learning. And he was able to graduate from high school, which was just a miracle, believe me.
Sure.
And then tragedy struck. He got a traumatic brain injury with an infection that caused a stroke, paralyzed on the right side of his body. They ended up in 4 months in the hospital replacing his skull with plastic. He has a plastic skull. He had so much infection, they weren't sure he would survive, but he did. When he got out of the hospital, his mama brought him back to my studio. He couldn't talk. He wasn't communicating. He was dragging the right side of his body with a walker. And is trying not to have his right hand curl up into a ball. Mm. But, well, let's try your left hand. Your left hand works. Let's just try drawing with your left hand. And this child, in a very short amount of time, was drawing as well as he had with his right. He was painting. He was able to start writing. Okay. Again, this is a child that's had dyslexia. So sure. He's overcoming a lot. Depression also was there. So he started not only doing better, but winning competitions again. Wow. And the next thing I know, I get a call from his neurosurgeon. He's like, I've never called anybody's art teacher before, but what are you doing, David? I'm like, I don't know. Teaching him to draw left-handed. He's stronger with his weak hand than I am. And I'm a surgeon, number one.
Yeah.
And he's getting healing on the right side of his body. David's starting to be able to talk. He started being able to walk. Now, I saw him last month, and he is a young man. You would not know he has a plastic skull. His sense of humor is in place. Walking and talking. His left hand is still stronger than his right hand, but it's not, you would not look at him and say all that this young man has overcome in his short life.
Wow.
And now his family's convinced, even his neurosurgeon convinced, art, doing art, healed his brain to a great extent. It's like this plasticity that's built into our brain allows wounded parts to be their function to be brought in by another part of the brain. And I just think it's just so cool, wonderfully, amazingly miraculous. So it's, you know, he's not the only example of that. I read about soldiers at Walter Reed Hospital. They were doing a special summer therapy for them because they had had the physical work done. They were wounded, they were injured, but they were still really struggling. And they did this summer program. And at the end of it, they did a survey and they said, what was your favorite part? Now, these are soldiers. They said art.
Wow.
They got the most benefit in healing doing art. A way of expression they hadn't even tried before was, you know, bringing healing to their lives. And so that's why I look at that and say, and we're all creatives, you know, even if that's not your career, that's not your orientation is so much more, you know, with your developed left brain. I'm saying, don't neglect your right brain. It can bring benefits in your life you can't even imagine. And so, you know, this encourages me. I also had a woman, this is an older student, who was just doing great in sculpture and just enjoying her this new hobby in my studio. And then she was given a terrible fatal diagnosis of cancer and
wow.
6 months to live. And, I said, you know, I got a big project I'm working on. Why don't you help me? It's in 9 months. I got hundreds of pieces to do. Please come in the studio and help me. And she's like, Karen, I don't even know if I'm going to be here in 9 months. I said, well, you know, you can leave a legacy for your family, right? You know, just come do it, get distracted. So between doing all the medical things you have to do, you know, horrible medical procedures, she was in the studio with me for hours. We laughed, we had fun. We, you know, how do we make, we were doing a show called Taste and See Sweet Shop. We were going to create a whole room to look like a sweet shop and everything was going to be made out of porcelain.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so we were coming up with glazes, this light chocolate, dark chocolate, you know, milk chocolate, had, you know, figuring out glazes. We had so much fun and she was engaged with me all the way. And when we had the show in 9 months, she was there all 17 days,
wow.
Went into remission. And now I'm happy to say is completely cancer free.
Incredible. Incredible.
And of course, you know, convinced that it wasn't just the medical procedures. A lot of people have the medical procedures and they sure. don't make it.
Sure.
But this art distraction gave her something to look at and hope for, was a joy to do, to be part of. And again, a legacy. And she is healed and well as a result.
Such a miracle, such a blessing. And really, it lends to the fact that we just don't know everything. There's so many things that we have yet to discover. And the only way to discover them is to be creative, to be curious, to get out there and ask the questions and find the answers and come up with new answers. And you're doing that, which is incredible, Karen. I commend you for your work and for what is just an infectious goodness that comes from you. I feel that. And I'm sure many of your students feel that as well, or else they wouldn't be thriving the way that they're thriving. That's
Thank
incredible.
You. I appreciate that. You know, with teaching in a rural community college here in South Carolina, I have students that have never been to museums, who've never,
really,
they might've been exposed to a little bit of art in a childhood class, but they come and they're not really interested in art. They have to take it, you know, for their requirements, but they know they got a career that's pretty much left brain. And I engage them. That's the reason I wrote this textbook, because I said, you know, they may not read it, but there's 1,800 pictures. They're going to see the pictures. They're going to see a rich legacy of this incredible art history that we have in the West. And I'm going to make sure that they find somebody they can relate to, that they can stop flipping the pages and say, wow, you know, look at that. Let me think about that. I have contemporary artists and people that are local that have some renown, have stories that they can possibly relate to.
Mm-hmm.
I have a great ethnic mix in my classes. And it is something that they all have to find somebody to touch base with, write a story, pick their art, describe it, and go to museum, they get credit. They don't have to do the final quiz if they go to museum and take a selfie, and which about 20% of them do, maybe 25% of them do. So it's about exposing us to a whole part of our lives that we may not understand can always be in our lives. It's as simple as taking a stroll and looking at the sunset. That can release that serotonin, increase your mood. But, you know, I'm not talking about a Fitbit watch where you're counting your steps and you're doing aerobics. I'm talking about the kind where you just hold hands with your grandchild or your husband or your significant other and just notice the colors or the clouds. Last night, the moon look it was covered with these rainbow looking clouds because of the way it was covering. And there were spotted clouds, almost like cottage cheese. It's like, you know, we notice this. This is our habit. We do this. That releases serotonin, and you lead, you know, end your day with a happy note on an uplifting emotional place. So I love the way that we're wired to have joy released and happiness released when we do these things that are part of our very being.
Well, and the other thing too, it's fun. It's fun. And Karen, that leads right into our quote. So I want to jump into that. I love this quote. I want you to, if you would, tell us the quote and who said it and why this really inspires you.
Yeah, Albert Einstein, of course, one of the 20th century's proclaimed geniuses of the generation, was very involved in creativity. He has a lot of quotes, but this one I love. He said, "Creativity is intelligence having fun."
Wow. And I understand from a lot of your stories and from this conversation why you chose this quote, but really, what does this quote say to you in the importance of creativity in our lives?
Well, first of all, coming from a man who's considered one of the greatest geniuses of the 20th century, it touches me. It kind of validates, you know, my coming. You know, what can an artist do? What kind of, you know, place in the world who has musicians, actors, you know, we try kind of, I'm not saying trivialized, but I think in a lot of our world, it is trivialized, the creative world. And those creatives, if we're not the 1% that makes a good living to the rest of us, we're not necessarily starving artists, but, you know, it's not, our motive isn't money, and it never has been, never could be. It's just not who we are. But we got validated by one of the smartest men of the 20th century. And he obviously valued creativity. He has many quotes about creativity. And because he was an inventor, he was already understanding that he wasn't just smart in his left brain. His part of his intelligence was because he was engaging his right brain in conjunction with his left brain. Yep. So he was living what I am talking about. And I believe that's true for everyone who's listening. You can be more brilliant. It seems to overcome brain fog. Mm. It helps with memory, intelligence. So there's all kinds of ways. I don't believe, I'm 70 years old, and I don't believe I'm going to be operating in a diminished mental capacity, because I'm making a choice every day. You know, it only takes, depending upon what study, 15 to 20 minutes a day. It's not like you have to, oh my gosh, I just don't have time to add one more thing to my day. Yes, right. You do. You got right. 20 minutes somewhere, you know, it's 20 minutes to take a walk and notice the moment. Be in the moment. That engages your right brain. Be in the moment. Sing in the car. Go ahead. Belt it. Who's going to complain? Right.
Right.
And it is healing your own brain. It's engaging that and in bringing to life this new creative side of you that maybe has been a little neglected, trivialized, or ignored. Don't do that anymore.
and I think too, I think it's so important for individuals to be able to use creativity to come up with their own thoughts, ideas, ways to improve things. It could be being creative in your job and something that you do or something that your company does, or it could be being creative with your children and how you interact and play. And, you know, I remember when my kids were growing up, of course, they're grown and out of the house for the most part at this point. But growing up, we would invent these little games that we would do, and they would coincide with fun events. We would, you know, we would go to the beach and play football on the beach. And we didn't go play football. We called it quarterback dad, because dad was too old to run up and down the beach. So he was the all-time quarterback. But they called it something different, and we created our own version of a game. And, you know, those are memories that we cherish. And guess what we were doing? We were having fun.
Absolutely.
and they talk about it to this day.
Oh, well, how about little kids that you buy them a gift and it comes in a box and they take, and they're more interested in the box than the toy. They've just turned the box into a fort, and they, you know, I mean, we just encourage that, you know, I mean, even just putting sheets over furniture and making, you know, dwelling places in the high. I mean, this is creative play, and we don't want to lose that as adults, or if we've lost it, we want to get back to that and really rediscover that playful, fun part of us. It's still there. You know, that's what we recognize. Yes, we've had all the concerns, and we have a very stressful, anxious, laden, fearful world that we need to get out of, get our head out of it, get our heart out of it, and really find what can bring you joy. Yeah. And, you know, if you're taking that little stroll I'm talking about, you know, bring your journal, take some notes, you know, let loose of your day, let loose of the struggles and the trials, touch base with our creator. Yeah. You know, take your sketchbook, you know, draw the leaves as they're turning or the flowers are blooming. I just did that this weekend. I was visiting with my mom and my sisters, and the gardenias were in bloom, and I had fun doing a watercolor of the gardenias. And you know what? It can't be about the product. And that's where I've really found with my students is engaging the right brain means you're not focused on the product. You're focused on the doing, on being in that moment, observing those soft velvety petals, and what colors are those shadows on that petal. And, you know, that's the part, that's really the joy, not the product. Is it's got to be way, way more than just the product. So as you're singing along, you know, karaoke in the car, it doesn't matter if it's on key or not. You know, the serotonin is released whether you're on key or not.
That's right.
Whether it looks like a flower or not, it still works for your brain.
Absolutely, it does. Karen, as we begin to wrap up, I always love for my audience to be able to utilize these quotes to be able to win their week. And of course, for me, that means that they're doing something above and beyond what they normally would do in order to reach their goals, whatever their goals are. And if they don't have goals, maybe winning their week is setting goals. And that's great. That's a week that you've won. So as we think about creativity, is intelligence having fun? How can people apply that to their lives for them to be able to win their week?
Well, I think we, you know, that's such a great question. And I really love that if your audiences want to feel more fun in their lives, that they will do this one thing. They will think back to some joyful activity when they were 4 or 5. Hmm. And what could you do about engaging in that now? I always loved to dance and spin and jump. And I was a very active child. One of my favorite Christmas presents is my husband bought us ballroom dancing classes,
oh, nice.
Which we did together. We got our kids involved. We got our community. We got our church involved. Yeah, you know, we were filling the place up for years and did this, had so much fun. Were we great at it? No. You know, some of us my husband's a musician. He has great rhythm, so he could do it. He's just more shy than me. But, you know, my kids loved it, and they still talk about that. So, you know, you think, all right, well, my dream of being a prima ballerina isn't going to happen. But you know what? That doesn't mean you can't dance. You know, my dream of being on Broadway as a singer, all right, that's not going to happen. But I can still involve in community theater, which, except for during COVID, we've been able to do, you know, and stay active in things that you love. And it will change your life every day. Just like I said, 15, 20 minutes a day. Just make a commitment to explore your creative right brain.
That's incredible. And I think it's something that's so incredibly important as well. Like you said, when we explore our creativity and those neural pathways connect, suddenly we have just a plethora of ideas, problem solving, things we hadn't thought of before. The brain fog clears simply by being creative. And that's part of, I think, what Einstein was saying. Creativity is intelligence, having fun. Imagine that. intelligence, having fun. It's not all work.
Worried. Yeah, that's right. Yes. Gets anxiety and worry and stress off of us. It's proven to reduce cortisol. You know, we need cortisol for ambition, but we don't need overflow. So, you know, these kind of things reduces that too, and brings you to that place of peace and fun. So
peace and balance. We have to have balance in all things. And I think, purposely seeking creativity and opportunities to be creative really brings balance to our neural pathways, to how we use our brain, to our lives. Like most other things, we just need to have that balance. Get creative with Karen.com, the 3-episode pop-up podcast. And I would encourage everyone to check that out. I will add the link in our episode notes. Karen DeLoach. Karen, thank you so much for being on the Quotivation Podcast. This has been a fascinating conversation, and I appreciate you bringing creativity to the forefront and the importance of it. So thank you so much for this conversation.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. God bless you. God bless you and your audience.
and you as well, Karen. Thank you so much. Well, thank you, Karen, for being on the Quotivation Podcast. That was Karen DeLoach, and bringing us a fantastic quote from Albert Einstein, that creativity is intelligence having fun. I love that quote. It's so much fun to be creative, and not everybody gets it. Not everybody does it. I understand. It's not everyone's thing to be creative, but it's so powerful and so healing, so therapeutic for us to be able to express ourselves, express what's in our hearts, what's in our minds, the things that we think about, the things that we conjure, the things that we want to bring to life. That's a lot of fun. And I want to thank Karen for being on. And I want you to take a look at the episode notes to check out her free pop-up podcast. Check out the episodes there. Karen goes into a lot of detail in terms of what we talked about today, how creativity spurs the soul and creates those neural pathways within our brains. It really helps the left side and the right side of the brain connect and trade information. And it allows us to be enhanced and to be better. So check out that pop-up podcast that Karen has available just for you, all free. And again, thank you, Karen, for being on the Quotivation Podcast. Hey, before you go check out that pop-up podcast, though, stick around. We've got just enough time for the last slice of cheesecake.
How about some dessert before you go? There isn't anything that can't be solved over a slice of cheesecake. So before we wrap things up, sit back, relax, and enjoy the last slice of cheesecake.
Creativity is intelligence having fun. And no one more intelligent than Albert Einstein, who is the author of that quote, one of the great minds to ever have walked the face of the earth, a genius. And yet he understood the importance of being creative, of expressing yourself, of allowing what's inside you to come out and to share that with the world. He knew that being creative not only elicited such feelings of great joy and emotion, of fun, but is also very healthy for the body. And it turns out he was right. As Karen explained, so many examples of her students coming to her with ailments, mental ailments, physical ailments, life-threatening conditions. And yet she expresses to them the importance of being creative and gives them the space to be creative how they want to be. She doesn't instruct. She doesn't tell them what to do. She puts a paintbrush in their hand, a pen, whatever the tool of choice is, and says, go. It's amazing. You know, creativity is such an important part of our lives. And so for some of us, it comes very easy. And for others of us, it does not. There are those of you out there that like your ABCD, 1, 2, 3, 4, step 1, step 2, step 3. Everything's in order. Everything's logical. Everything is thought provoked from a list from instructions, from a guidebook. We can't handle the chaos of creativity, the messiness of it. No. The paint by numbers says that number 7 should be red, and we can only paint within the box that has a 7, the color red. Sometimes we have to paint outside the lines. Sometimes we have to color outside the lines. Sometimes we have to, as much as I hate the cliche, think outside the box. To allow our minds to explore, to go free, to be open, to share what's inside, as raw as it is. You kind of throw the spaghetti noodle against the wall and see what sticks. It's messy. It's chaos. But it's necessary. Just as necessary as it is for creative types to be disciplined in their logic, to be disciplined in their lists and their instructions. It all works together. And the sooner we can connect and allow those neural pathways to connect from the right side to the left side or the left side to the right side, and information pass back and forth within our brains, that's when we evolve. That's when we learn. That's when we grow. And that is when we have fun. You want to win your week this week? Go do something creative. I don't care what it is. Write a poem. Sing a song. Paint a picture. Create something. Even if you're creating it on the computer, that's allowed. It's okay. Express yourself. What's inside of you that you want to get out so that the world can hear what's going on in your brain? Allow your brain to express itself. Allow your heart to speak to the world. Allow yourself to bloom where you're planted. That's how you win your week this week. I want to thank Karen Deloach for being on the Quotivation Podcast. I want to thank Amy Real, the real deal in all things mortgage, for sponsoring this week's Shot of Motivation. And I want to thank you for listening. Until next time, stay quotivated.
You have been listening to the Quotivation Podcast, hosted by America's leading emerging speaker, Jody Powell. If you would like to book Jody to speak at your company, conference, or next event, visit www.jodypowellspeaks.com. You can also email him at Jody, that's J-O-D-Y, at jodypowellspeaks.com. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to the Quotivation Podcast. And remember, stay quotivated.